Chapter 24. "Oh, hi," I manage to say. "Just getting some air." Elaine looks at me and opens her purse and finds her pack of Kleenex. I'm confused by it until I press it to my eye and it comes away wet. We stand, looking at the water glittering darkly under the fading sunset sky. I'm too upset to comprehend I'm about to unload to his mother. Any sympathetic ear at this point will do me. It's not like I'll ever see her again. He never told me about Mindy. She is aggrieved and frowns back across the lawns. He should have. You shouldn't have found out this way. It all makes so much sense. I can't believe I've been so stupid. The way he's been acting has been pretty unbelievable.
Like he's in love with you?
Yes. My voice breaks a little. He told me once he's a good actor. I can't believe this. She says nothing and puts her hand on my shoulder. Every single glimmer of foolish hope feels extinguished in this moment.
I don't think he's been playing a game.
Elaine's mouth twists. The word game only crystallizes further the hurt in my gut. Oh, I'm sorry, but you have no idea how good at games he is. Every day of our working relationship, Monday to Friday. This has got to be the first time he's played me on the weekend, though. Elaine looks past me, and I can see Josh's silhouette pacing along the side of the building in agitation. She shakes her head and he stops.
Why did you come today?
She is genuinely curious. I owed him a favor. He told me I was coming along for moral support. I didn't know why, but I came anyway. I thought it was something to do with him dropping out of medicine. And now I find out his ex-girlfriend is marrying his brother. I'm in a soap opera right now. Elaine steadies me with a hand on my elbow. When she speaks, she's got a fond smile teasing at the edge of her lips. I speak to him on Sundays, and I've known you for as long as he's known you. A beautiful girl. Bluest eyes, reddest lips, blackest hair. He describes you like a fairy tale character. He's never quite decided on princess or villain. I put my hands into my hair and make two fists. Villain. I feel like the world's biggest idiot to even believe for one day he could be so... I can't finish. You're the girl he calls Shortcake. When I first heard your nickname, I knew. I will tell you now, he's never looked at anyone the way he looks at you. I am starting to feel irritated with this lovely woman. It's pretty clear she's so biased I can no longer use her as a sounding board. She cannot believe her son would do anything so hurtful. I open my mouth, but she silences me firmly. He dated Mindy. I'm so glad to have her for a daughter-in-law. Sweet as pie. Cinderella hasn't got anything on Mindy. She's lovely. She's not my issue. But she never challenged Josh. You have since the first day you met him. You make him angry. You've never been scared of him. You've taken the time to try to understand him, just to get the upper hand in your little office skirmishes. You notice him. I've tried not to. Neither Josh nor his father are easy men. Some men are a delight. Patrick, for example. Reasonable. Calm, ready with a smile. Josh has a nickname for him, too. Mr. Nice Guy. It's true, he is. It takes a strong woman to love someone like Josh. And I think it's you. Patrick's an open book. Josh is a safety deposit box. But he's worth it. You won't believe me, and I can't blame you tonight. But so is his father. Elaine waves Josh over, and he begins striding toward us. Please go easy on him. You could have caught the bouquet, she admonishes me. If you'd put your arms out a little. I couldn't. She kisses my cheek and hugs me with such kind familiarity I close my eyes. You will one day. If you decide to stay, we're having a family breakfast at 10 a.m. in the restaurant. I'd really love to see you both. She walks back down the path where she intercepts Josh. They begin urgently conferring.
great. She's giving the enemy a warning of what he's in for. I am so tired of being in this place, by this water, under this. I go and sit on a low concrete bench and try to cram my heart back into my chest. Even his mother thought Josh was in love.
You found out about the Mindy thing?
In the 20 yards it took for him to get to me, he's no doubt framed his argument.
Yep, well done. You sure fooled me.
Fooled you. He sits beside me and reaches for my hand, but I pull away. Cut the shit. I know you've been parading me around in front of Mindy and her family. Maybe you should have hired someone better looking than me.
Do you seriously believe that's why you're here?
He has the audacity to look shaken. Imagine being in my position. I take you to my ex-boyfriend's wedding, and I'm all over you like a rash. I make you feel special, important. I make you feel beautiful. There's a tremor in my voice. And then you find out, and suddenly you're left wondering if it was real.
You being here has nothing to do with Mindy, at all.
But she's the tall blondie you broke up with after the merger, right? She's the one we talked about in bed this morning? Your big old heartbreak? Why didn't you just tell me this morning?
I put my hands over my face and lean my elbows on my knees.
Josh turned sideways in his seat.
We were in bed, and you were just starting to look at me like you didn't hate me. And she's not my heartbreak.
I cut him off. I could handle being a rent-a-date, but you really should have been clear with me up front. That was a dick move, and frankly, I'm mad at myself for not expecting you'd do something like this.
Josh's urgency is growing. He puts his hand on my shoulder and turns me gently toward him. We stare into each other's eyes.
I wanted you here because I always want you with me.
I don't care that she's just married Patrick. It's ancient history to me.
How could I tell you this morning and ruin the moment?
I knew how you'd react, just like this.
You're damn right I'm reacting like this,
like a teary, fire-breathing dragon.
Didn't I specifically ask you if there was any touchy subject I needed to know about, so I'd be forewarned? You could have told me back in the office, days ago. Not now.
You would never have agreed to come under those circumstances, had you known.
You would have refused to believe this weekend could be anything more than an act. Whatever your reaction, it wouldn't have been good.
I grudgingly admit to myself that he's probably right. Even if he had managed to get me to come, I probably would have invented a character, and I definitely would have worn false eyelashes. He touches a fingertip to my wrist. I've had my focus on other things, believe it or not. Mom's flower arrangements, Dad's mood, your blood sugar. Telling you about this just faded away to the edges.
He looks across the water and pulls his tie loose.
Mindy is a nice person, but I didn't bring you here to show her how well I've moved on. I don't care what she thinks.
I don't believe you can be so cool about this situation.
I can't detect any emotion in his eyes at all as he casts his eyes back across the water, contemplating. She was never going to be my wife, put it that way. We were wrong for each other.
Hearing his voice say my wife makes me go too still. Eyes frozen and unblinking, pupils dilated to black coins. Terror and panic and possession torches my throat dry. I don't want to examine why I feel this way. I'd rather jump in the water and start swimming. He looks at me sideways, his face tense.
Now that I've promised that you're not here as some part of an elaborate revenge scenario, can you tell me the real reason this bothers you so much? Other than my lie by omission and people staring at us. People that you never have to see again.
This is skating way too close to my tangled up new feelings. I try for several long moments to come up with an answer that sounds even halfway credible. But when I can't, I get to my feet and walk so fast back to the hotel he has to lengthen his stride to keep up.
Wait.
I'm getting a bus home. I try to close the elevator door on him, but he shoulders in easily. I press the button for our floor and dig for my phone to look up a bus schedule. I have no idea what time it is. I have several missed calls.
Josh tries to speak, but I put my hand up until he crosses his arms, exasperated. I click through them distractedly. Danny has been trying to get a hold of me a couple of times throughout the afternoon. I have a few texts along the lines of, "Do you have a font preference? I'll choose then. Could you call me back when you can?" The elevator bings. Josh looks like he's 1 second away from going stark raving insane. I know the feeling. "Leave me alone," I tell him with as much dignity as I can, and walk to the far end of the corridor, where a pair of armchairs are arranged beside a bay window. During the day, this would be a nice spot to sit with a book. In the evening, as the last peach glows of sun leave the sky, it's the perfect place to fume. I sit down and dial a local bus company. A late-night express is leaving at 7:15, and they are already stopping by the hotel to pick up someone else. The gods are smiling upon me. Going back to the room will mean having to finish things with Josh, and I am burned out. A husk. I have nothing left. I need to procrastinate. Danny answers on the second ring. "Hi," he says, tone a little stiff. Nothing more annoying than an uncontactable client, I imagine. Especially one you're doing a favor for. "Hi, sorry I've been out of touch. I've been at a wedding and my phone is on silent." "It's okay. I just finished." "Thank you so much. Did it all go okay?" "Yep, for the most part. I'm at home now, checking it on my iPad, flipping through the pages. The formatting looks good." "Whose wedding is it?" "The brother of a complete asshole." "You're with Joshua. How'd you guess?" "I had a feeling." He laughs. "Don't worry. Your secrets are all safe with me." "I hope so." I couldn't care less at this point. It would serve me right to be humiliated in the halls of B&G. "When are you back? I'd like to show you the final product." "Tomorrow at some point. I'll call you when I'm back in town and I can meet you." "If you come over on Monday evening, it would work for me. I've kept the spreadsheet that you wanted. It breaks down the time it took, along with what I think costs would be by a designer in a usual commercial setting, but also a salaried staff member." "I'm impressed. Maybe I should bring you a thank you pizza." "Yes, please." Danny's voice drops a cheeky half octave. "So, what did you wear to this wedding?" "A blue dress." I see Josh's reflection over me in the window and jump in fright. He takes the phone out of my hand and looks at the caller ID. "It's Joshua. Don't call her again. Yes, I'm serious." He hangs it up and slides it into his pocket. "Hey, give it back." "No fucking chance. He's who you had to sneak off and call?" The look in his eyes is getting sharper, blacker. "It's work-related." He tugs on my hands to make me stand up. A door opens near us. Too close to other rooms to indulge in one of our signature yelling matches. We both purse our lips and march into our room. I try not to slam the door. "Well?" Josh crosses his arms. "It was work-related." "Sure. A work-related call. Dinner? What are you wearing?" He skates narrowed eyes over me, like he's contemplating ripping the skin right off me. I can relate. I want to punch him in the face. Energy and anger is making the air almost sulfuric. The thing about Joshua is, even when he's furious, he's still exquisite to look at. Maybe even more so than usual. He's all glittery black eyes and an angry tensing jaw, messed up hair and a hand on his hip, pulling his blue shirt tight. It makes being angry back with him just that little bit harder, because I have to try to not notice. It's an unachievable endeavor that I've always struggled with as long as I've known him. But still, I persevere. "You've got no right to lecture me. I knew this was a disaster the second I got into your car." I kick off both my shoes across the room. "I'm leaving soon. There's a bus." I grab at my bag and he stops me with a raised hand. "In between Danny and Mindy, we've kind of had our fair share of jealous revelations today, don't you think? I'm going to crack if you don't just listen to me for once." He wrenches out his cufflinks and tosses them on the dresser, and shoves up his sleeves, muttering to himself, "Little fucking asshole. What is she wearing? That guy has a fucking death wish." The expression on his face makes me wonder if I've got a death wish too. I try to position myself behind the armchair just to give myself the illusion of space, but he points between his leather shoes. "Don't hide. Get over here." "This better be good." I cross the room to stand in front of him and put my hands on my hips just to puff myself up. He takes a few long moments to decide how to proceed. "Two simple issues first. Danny and Mindy." He looks like he's taking control of a board meeting. He practically has a presentation slide behind him. "Do you care about Danny? Could you love him one day?" Those eyes belong to the king of the serial killers. "I called Danny about something for work. Something to do with my interview." "You already knew this. Forgive me for not wanting to spill my secrets to the person I'm competing against." "Answer my question." "No and no. He's helping me with something I'm using in my presentation. It's a design job, and he's a freelancer now. He's doing me a massive favor working over the weekend, but I couldn't care less if I never saw him again." His insane eyes dialed down a few notches. "Well, I couldn't care less about Mindy. It's why she left me for my brother." "You could have told me. Back in your apartment, on your couch, I would have tried to understand. We were almost friends then." I realize something else that's bothering me. He didn't trust me with this. "I finally have you coming over to sit on my couch, and you think I'm going to tell you about how I was such a terrible boyfriend, she ended up with my brother? It's not really a glowing endorsement of my character. Gee, wouldn't you want to stick around after hearing that?" I can spot the faint wash of darker color on his cheekbones. He's embarrassed as hell. "Why am I even here? Moral support, remember?" I watch him try and fail several times to start. "If anyone has broken my heart, it wasn't Mindy. It was my dad." He puts his hand over his face. "You were always right about why I needed moral support. No big conspiracy. It's medicine. Me quitting, failing, disappointing. You're here because I'm scared of my own fucking dad." "What did your dad do?" I can barely ask it. When I think of dads, I think of my own. A big, funny, sonic boom since I was a kid, always surprising me with smurfs and beard-burned cheek kisses. I know there are bad dads. When I see the look on Josh's face, I wish to God he didn't have one. He's ignored me my entire life. It sounds like the first time he's spoken those words. He looks at the ground, miserable. I creep closer to him. Another weird kaleidoscopic twist. His hurt makes my own heart hurt. "Has he hit you? Has he forced you into medicine?" Josh shrugs. "The British royal family have an expression. The heir and the spare. I'm the spare. Patrick was first born. Dad's not one of those people who's willing to dilute his efforts, if you know what I mean. They were only ever planning on having one kid, too. I was a surprise." "You would have been wanted." I have his crumpled cuff in my hand now, and I give him an awkward little shake. "Look at how much your mom loves you." "But to Dad, I was not in the plan. Patrick has always been his focus, and look where he is now. The best son, effectively the only son, making Dad proud on his wedding day." He won't meet my eyes. We're mining some old, deep, painful territory here. "Nothing I did rated a mention. Dad wouldn't pay a cent toward my tuition, but Mom did. I studied my ass off like a complete sucker for punishment." Nothing pleased him. The bitterness in his voice sounds like it is choking him. My anger has steamed out of my pores now, and I can't do anything but put my arms around him and hug until my arms ache. "I thought if I could become a doctor too, maybe he'd notice you. Just like his mom said. And meanwhile, perfect, golden child Patrick, who can do no wrong, was making it look easy. The thing about Patrick is, he's so nice. He's so goddamn nice. He'll do anything for anyone. even get up in the middle of the night and drive over to help me with you. Man, can he be any nicer? It makes it impossible for me to hate him. And I want to, so bad. He's your brother. I link my arm into his. It's obvious he'd do anything for you. There's a perfect son, and then there's me. I may as well be the best at something, even if it is being an asshole. I'll never be nice. You need to imagine what it was like growing up with a parent like him. I've had to make myself this way. I think of him stomping around at B&G, trying to hide his shyness and insecurity behind that mask. I hate to break it to you, Josh, but underneath it all, you're nice too. I've got no interest in being the second best at anything. I'm never being second again. His voice is ironclad with determination. I think of the promotion, and some deep part of my brain sighs, oh, fuck it. Is this why you've always hated me? I'm so nice. I'm way too nice, and you've always hated it. I tug the sleeve of my dress a little straighter. It killed me to watch you try your heart out for people who were using your kindness. It made me want to stand up for you and protect you from it. I couldn't, though, because you hated me, so I had to get you to stand up for yourself. And my niceness made it impossible to hate me? Hopefulness has rendered me pathetic. He puts a thumb under my chin and tilts my face. Yeah. Well, this is a sad story. When he kisses me on the cheek, I know it is an apology, and I suspect that I'll probably accept it. Don't get me wrong. I didn't have some traumatic childhood or anything. I always had a roof over my head and so forth. And my mother is the best, he says, affection in his tone now. I can't complain. Yes, you can. He looks at me, surprised. No one should ever be ignored or made to feel unimportant. You've achieved a lot of things in your career, and you should be proud of yourself. I emphasize the last word. You can complain all you want. I'm Team Josh, remember? Are you? I hear some of the tension melt out of him a little. I never thought I'd hear those words fall from your flamethrower lips. Not after tonight. You and me both. So you completed pre-med? Yes. I have no idea how I did it. It was the most insanely stressful thing I'd ever put myself through. How boggling. Dr. Josh, indeed. Well, surely your dad must have taken notice of you then. Mom made the biggest fuss ever. She threw a party. It seemed like everyone who'd ever known me was invited. It was at our house here. It's on the beach. I suppose it was a great party in retrospect, but Dad wasn't there.
He skipped it?
I hug him, resting my cheek on his chest. I feel his hands slide up my back, like he's soothing me. Yeah, he didn't bother to swap shifts at the hospital like Mom had asked him to. He skipped it entirely. When Patrick completed pre-med, Dad gave him our grandfather's Rolex. For me, he couldn't even bother turning up. He's always known I wasn't cut out for it. Watching me try so hard made me pathetic. So him not turning up to the party means you haven't spoken to your father properly for 5 years? You've got to see it's hurting your mom. She's got permanently sparkly eyes from trying not to cry. That night I got incredibly drunk. I was sitting down there by myself on the sand by the water, emptying this bottle of whiskey into my mouth. Alone, melodramatic. Behind me is the house, filled with people, but no one had noticed the guest of honor was gone. He looks a little amused, but I know underneath it is a deep hurt. I remember looking at him once in the team meeting, 1,000 years ago, and wondering if he ever felt isolated. I know the answer now. So you sat out there, drunk? What did you do? Go in and make a scene? No. But I realized something I'd worked so hard for, his approval, had resulted in absolutely no outcome. I'm like him, maybe. Why try? Why bother? I decided then and there to quit trying. I'd go and get the first job I could. He turns me a little in his arms, and when he holds me close again, he's rubbing my shoulder like I'm the one who needs comfort. I stopped making any kind of effort to engage with him. And it was like the biggest source of stress in my life was removed. I stopped. I thought, when he wants to be a father to me, he'll make the move. And he hasn't? Josh keeps talking like he hasn't even heard me. The thing that gets me is, when I switched to doing an MBA at night while working at Bexley, he was unimpressed. Like he'd had any kind of opinion. Like I wasn't even noticed or acknowledged enough to disappoint. But I have. Over and over, my entire life. My career is a joke to him. I'm surprised by how angry I'm getting. I think of Anthony, his face permanently twisted into a sarcastic expression. He's lost something special in you. Why is he like this? I don't know. If I knew, maybe I could change it. He's just been that way with me and most people. But Josh, this is what I don't get. You're so overqualified for what you do at BNG. We both are, he tells me. Why do you stay? Prior to the merger, I nearly quit every day. But I already had the family reputation as a quitter. And post-merger? He looks away, and I see the edge of his mouth beginning to curl in a smile. The job had a few good things about it. You enjoyed fighting with me too much. Yeah, he admits. How did you end up working at Bexley anyway? I applied for 20 jobs in a fit of rage. It was the first offer I got. Richard Bexley's lowly servant. You didn't even care. I wanted to work for a publisher so badly, I cried when I heard I'd got the job. He has the grace to look guilty. I suppose you'd think it was unfair if I got the promotion now. No. The process is based on merit. But Josh, you've got to know, it's my dream. B&G is my dream. He doesn't say anything. What could he say? So you really didn't bring me along to show Mindy you'd moved on with some hot little dweeb? I know his face better than my own, and I can't see a trace of a lie. When he speaks, there is none. I couldn't face him without you. I am an embarrassment. Dropped out of med school, administrative job, lost the girl to my brother. I'm nothing to him. Mindy and Patrick can have 10 children and be married for 100 years for all I care. Good luck to them. I let myself say it. Okay, I believe you. We sit in silence for a moment before he speaks again. The worst thing is, I keep wondering what I'd be now if I'd stuck with medicine. I've got so much inside me I have no idea about. I'm like the mayor of a city I've never seen. He smiles at my phrasing. If you knew the kind of little miracles happening every moment you breathe in, you wouldn't be able to handle it. A valve could close and not open. An artery could split. You could die. At any moment, it's nothing but miracles inside your tiny city. He presses a kiss to my temple. Holy shit. I clutch at him. You wouldn't believe the stats on people who go to bed one night and never wake up. Normal, healthy people who aren't even old. Why would you tell me this? Is this what you think about? There's the longest pause. I used to. Not so much anymore. I think I preferred it when I thought I was full of white bones and red goo. Why am I now thinking about dying tonight? Now you see why I can't do small talk. Sorry, Dad scared you about the cake. He's jealous he can't let himself go enough to enjoy something. I don't think I've eaten cake in a few years. Man, it was good. Filthy little pigs, the pair of us. Want to go downstairs and see if there's any left? He looks at me with guarded hope. You're not leaving? I remember my plans to get the bus home. No, I'm not leaving. It's helpful he's still sitting on the dresser. It means when I step closer and take his face in my hands, I can reach him with only a little tiptoeing. It means I can feel the tingling sparks jumping in the air between our lips, his sigh of relief that tastes sweeter than sugar. His pulse jumps under my fingertips. It's a pretty convoluted game we've played to make it to this moment. It's helpful he's still sitting on the dresser, because I can pull his lips to mine. Chapter 25. When I kiss him, his exhalation is long, until he's surely completely empty. I want to fill him back up. I don't realize it until a few minutes of dreamy, melting minutes have passed that I've been talking to him with my kiss. You matter. You're important to me. This matters. I know that he understands because there is a fine tremor in his hands as he slides one fingernail up the side seam of my dress, across my shoulders, to my nape. He tells me things, too. You're who I want. You're always beautiful. This really matters. He toys with the zipper of my dress for a tiny, jingling eternity and then pulls it down. It makes a sound like a needle dragging across a record. He deepens the kiss, and I push closer in between his knees, and wild horses could not drag me away from this man and this room. I will kiss him until I die of exhaustion. When I feel the sharp edge of his teeth on my lips, I know I'm not alone in this. I let the dress drop and step out of it, bending to pick it up. Self-consciousness prevails, and I hide behind it a little, until I look so silly that I have no choice to hold it aside. I had to wear an ivory bodysuit under the dress, like a little swimsuit, to give it a smooth line, and it has little suspenders holding up my stockings. Sleepy Saurus, it ain't. Josh looks like he's been stabbed in the gut. Holy shit, he says faintly. I hand him the dress and put my hand on my hip. His eyes eat every line and curve of me, even as his hands neatly fold my dress in half. My legs are ridiculously short, and I don't have the benefit of my heels, but the way he looks at me makes my tiny knees weak. You've gone a bit quiet on me here, Josh. I slide my finger under the shoulder strap of this ridiculous thing I'm wearing and pause. I see his throat swallow. I put my hands on his neck, squeeze briefly in a strangle, then slide them down. He's so solid, heavy, the heat radiating from within the muscles flexing under my palms. I step in closer and put my face into his throat and breathe him in. I close my eyes and beg myself to remember this. Please remember this when you're 100 years old. His hands slide down my waist to take my butt in both hands, and when I begin to kiss his throat, he squeezes me tighter. Shirt off. Come on now. My voice is rough and cajoling. He begins unbuttoning his shirt, looking dazed. When he shrugs out of the shirt, I can see his back in the reflection of the dresser mirror. You've still got paintball bruises. I do too. My free hand is groping along his chest, and I break off the kiss to watch myself do it. The muscles are all stacked together like Legos. I press my fingertips to watch his flesh give. His hands haven't moved from my ass, but his fingertips have slid down to stroke the little ribbons holding up my stockings. To stop myself from making an embarrassingly loud moan, I kiss him again, wriggling closer to him. I had it all planned. He finally finds his voice again, moving me backwards smoothly to the bed. He hauls the coverlid away and lays me back against the sheets with easy strength. It was going to be a little more romantic than a hotel room. Josh, thinking about romance? My heart can't take it. He captures my mouth in a kiss, and it's so gentle I could cry. See, he says into my mouth, I don't hate you, Lucy. His tongue touches mine, tentative, shy. He drops himself down on his elbows, caging me with his biceps, and it triggers the memory of him pressing me against a tree, shielding me, covering me. I was always covering for you. I sigh, and he breathes it in. That's it. I stretch and wriggle underneath his weight. You're so big. It gets me hot. And you're so tiny. It makes me wonder about all the ways we'll fit together. It's all I've been thinking about since the day we met. Oh, sure. The momentous day you looked at me, head to toe, then out the window. He's giving my throat the softest bites imaginable. He slides his fingers into mine above our heads, and we're now holding hands. How did we get back here? To this tender place after the blaze of anger burned us both up. It's so sweet, so completely soft and gentle and Josh, if we do this tonight, I'm not going to let you get weird on me. His eyes are solemn as he braces himself up a little. Are you going to have one of your infamous freakouts? I don't know. Very possibly. I try for a joke, but he's not remotely amused. I wish I knew how much I have of you. How much do I get? He's kissing me on the throat again, fingers tightening on mine. Until the interviews, you get it all, I say into his skin, and he lets out a shaky breath, like I've offered him forever, not a few days. We begin kissing again, and the friction of my thigh against his groin is spurring him into a slightly heavier rhythm. His mouth is wet, soft, delicious. The moment he stops, even to take a proper breath, I tug him back. After an eternity, he tangles his hand in the strap on my shoulder. He runs it lasciviously through his fingers, pulling it taut, releasing it with the faintest snap, and then does it again. The zip's at the side, I tell him. Technically, I think I begged him. He ignores me completely and instead slides his finger down to the bow between my breasts. The smallest bow I've ever seen. He dips his head and bites it. We're going so slowly. I wouldn't be surprised to open my eyes and see daylight. He's always completely different from what I expect. Soft instead of hard. Slow instead of fast. Shy instead of brash. My previous boyfriends and any of their egg timer foreplay attempts are distant memories now that I'm experiencing the intense pleasure of lying underneath Josh. He slides a hand into my hair, and the scrape of his nails against my scalp makes my skin break into goosebumps. He licks them. He coils up smoothly to kneel between my feet, seemingly just for a better view. It works for me. I watch his stomach flex, and I make a sound like, "Ugh." How do you even look like this? I don't have anything better to do than go to the gym. You do now. I sit up too and drag my mouth across the muscles, and I do what I've always wanted to. I get my hands on his ass, and it is fabulous. His hands slide into my hair, and I begin making out with his stomach. I can't help myself. I find a little bit of hair and look up to see he's got a light dusting on his chest, in a line down, disappearing beyond the waistband of his suit pants. "Horny eyes," he tells me shakily. "No kidding. I want to snort you. You always smell amazing." I press my nose into his skin and breathe in as hard as I can, and he begins to laugh. I look up at him and grin. His fingers are resting on the zip at my side. "I'm completely covered in bruises," I say by way of a disclaimer. I suck my stomach in, looking at his abs. "You're cute when you get shy. I'll go slow." He eases one strap down, lets it rest against my arm. He does the same with the other one. He bites his lip. "I'm going to sit down. I feel too tall." There's a brief reshuffle when he leans against the headboard, and I settle between his legs and rest back against him. His hands spread over my shoulders, and my eyes close as he begins to rub. The sweetest, most strangely timed massage. Most men would be unzipping and feeling by now, but he's not most men. "You sat like this when you were sick." He continues to massage, the friction between us blooming outward. He scoops my hair away and presses his mouth on the side of my neck. I'll barely be able to remember my own name at this rate. He slides his hand into the satin and weighs my bare breast in his hand. Slowly, gently, his fingers pinch. "Oh yeah," he groans and presses his mouth back to my neck. I hear the sound I make, the kind of harsh intake people usually make from extreme pain, except I feel like I'm halfway to orgasm. "Imagine all the things we're going to do," he says, almost to himself. I don't want to imagine. I want to know. My feet are scrambling uselessly against the sheets, like I'm being electrocuted. "You will. But tonight isn't enough. I can already feel it. I've always told you, I need days, Weeks. I barely notice the zipper sliding down. He's easing me out of the stretchy satin because the feeling of his big palms smoothing over me is sublime. I'm being coddled and patted, skin warmed, everything admired. When I manage to open my eyes, his breath is steaming hot underneath my ear and the cream fabric is puddled at my waist. He unclips my stockings and leans over my shoulder to look at me. Mmm. He hooks his fingers into the sides of the fabric at my hips, tugs it down my legs, and I'm naked except for my stockings. I see the leg of his suit pants, which makes my nudity feel even more vulnerable. I bring my knees up, trying to hide myself, but there's no point. He makes kind, soothing sounds against the back of my ear. His huge hand strokes down my hip, my thigh, then clasps my waist. The other hand follows suit. Lucy, is all he can seem to say. Lucy, how am I going to walk away from tonight? Seriously. How? I get goosebumps. I'm wondering the same thing. I let my head drop to one side and we kiss. I'm hoarse and breathless. I'm gonna die tonight. Please take your pants off. I want that embroidered on a pillow, he says, and I laugh until I'm gasping. You're so funny. I've always thought so. I could never laugh, but I wanted to. Ah, so that's one of your rules. He slides off the bed, hand on the button at his waistband. So the aim of the game is to not laugh. The aim is to make the other person laugh. Come on. I'm getting cold. I'm getting impatient, more like. He pulls the sheets and blankets over me when I shiver, and I watch him like a lecherous creep as he manages to ease the zip down on his pants. I have my own rules, and the aim of the game is different for me. Watching Josh take off a pair of suit pants is on another level. He's in these stretchy black trunks. They're badly bent out of shape in front. Do tell. Come on. He slides those shorts down and my mouth drops open. Seems that even my fevered imagination was woefully inadequate. I'm about to tell him that he is glorious when he snaps the lamp and we are plunged into darkness. No. Josh, that's absolutely not fair. Light on. I want to look at you. I flail my arm at the lamp, but when he slides into the blankets and I register the warmth of his body against mine, we make identical sounds of disbelief. Skin to skin. The heat of it. I have no idea where he is precisely. He's all over me. I think I feel his breath in my hair, but we roll a little, and when he sighs, it's down near my ribcage. It's disconcerting and erotic, and I nearly jolt out of my skin when he slides one hand across my ribs. Another hand is dispensing with my stockings, smoothing down my legs. He's touching my ankle and gently pinching at the little curve of my waist. I've got hands sliding all over me. You're so soft, it's ridiculous. Everywhere my hand slides, you fit me. I was so right. He demonstrates. Throat, breast, ribs, hips. Then he shows me his mouth fits perfectly, too. My skin heats with every kiss and press. He licks at the sheen of sweat beginning to mist across me, and I hear a faraway sound that I realize is me. Whimpering, begging noises. He takes no notice and shows no pity. He presses his perfect mouth on whatever section of skin he pleases. Inch by inch, he is charting me like a map. Which is all very well, except that Josh has a body that I need to get my hands on. When he's partway through traversing the upper curve of my spine, my pleading whispers begin to wear him down. Please let me touch you. He relents and rolls me over, and I run my hands down his neck to the big muscles at the tops of his arms. I squeeze, I bite. I use both hands to stroke down one bicep, weighing the muscle in my hand. It's such a pleasure to be touching someone else. It's satin, this skin. My palms tingle from stroking it. My mouth fits everywhere that I can kiss him. My eyes are adjusting, and I can see the glint in his eye as I take my time, testing every new muscle, tendon, and joint that I encounter. In the dark, I slide my body against his, feeling his size, and I tug him down to lie on me properly. I'm pretty heavy. I'll flatten you. I've had a good life. He laughs, husky and pleased, and obeys me, pressing me down so firmly into the mattress I lose half the air in my lungs. Oh, so good. So heavy. I love it. He kneels up after another minute, because I am gradually dying. I reach down between us and take hold of his intriguing hardness. He lets me fondle and play until his every broken breath convinces me of the fact that he's falling apart at the seams, and it's because of me. I can't think of anything more I could win. But then I feel his mouth against my hip bone, and then he starts kissing my thighs. I have to laugh, both from the tickling of his stubble and the memory of our uniform argument from a lifetime ago. He kisses my thighs in open-mouthed reverence, whispering things I can't properly hear. They feel like they must be complimentary words, the hot breath punctuated with licks, bites, more kisses. I could never withstand the soft pressure of this mouth, and there's no doubting his intention. My legs fall open, and I stare into the dark at the ceiling. The first touch is a swirl, the kind of lick you'd make to the top of a melting ice cream cone. I breathe in so hard I nearly snort, and he kisses my inner thigh, a reward. I can't form any human words. The second is a kiss, and I think of his signature first date kiss. Chaste, soft, no tongue. The promise of everything to come. I hug a pillow and decide he's never going on a first date with anyone, ever again. The third is a kiss again, but it disintegrates from chaste to dirty so slowly, I barely know when it's changed. He's got all the time in the world, and with each minute ticking by, my body simultaneously relaxes and winds tighter. I find my voice and manage to sound crisp and prissy. I don't think there's anything about doing this in the HR manual. I can feel him shiver and groan. Sorry, he tells me. You're right. He doesn't stop, but continues to flaunt the HR regulations for an untold number of minutes. I'm shaking closer and closer to the blinding, personal explosion I feel nearby on the horizon. Frankly, I'm surprised I've lasted this long. I put a hand down and sink my fingers into his hair and tug. I can't handle it. Please, I need more. Way, way more. I slide away, clutching at him, pulling him up by the arm with superhuman strength. He sighs indulgently and kneels up, and I finally hear that magic foil rip. His voice would sound authoritative when he speaks next, except it has a shaky, breathless edge, totally undermining his efforts. I'm finally having you. I'm finally having you, I counter. He drops down, and I'm surprised when the lamp flicks on. Dazzled, I close my eyes, and when I open them, he's looking at me. The black sapphire facets of his eyes are doing strange things to my heart. Hey, shortcake. Our fingers tangle again above my head. The first press he makes is gentle, and my body takes, and then takes some more. He's pressing his temple to mine, making desperate sounds, like he's in pain, like he's trying to live through this. I involuntarily clench, and he jerks forward, hard. My head nearly hits the headboard, and I laugh. Sorry, he says, and I kiss his cheek. Don't apologize. Do it again. Chapter 26. We've never played the staring game with you inside me. His hips flex a little, and my eyelids start to flutter. I was expecting the pleasure and pressure, given that he's huge and I'm small, but it's emotion now, tightening my throat until I can't reply. It's his eyes and the expression in them as he begins to roll his hips, slick and easy. There's no hard impact, no teeth-chattering thuds, He moves against me with measured control. This is the hottest moment of my life. I can't process each sensation. A feeling similar to freaking out is beginning to fill my chest. I can't keep my composure under his eyes. Passionate eyes. Intense, fierce, fearless eyes. He wants me to hand over everything. He won't take anything less from me. Talk to me. He touches my nose with his. His breath is heavy and even. You were right. You fit me somehow. Oh, that's so nice. I can barely speak. I'm freaking out slightly. Nice, huh? He looks at me with amusement. I can always do better than nice. He lets go of my fingertips, slides a hand under each of my thighs, and lifts me a few inches off the bed. Nice is good, nice is good. I babble. My next sound is a groan. Joshua Templeman really, really knows what he's doing. My eyes roll back into my head. I know they do because he smiles a bit and moves his hips again. The blankets fall away, and I'm front row, looking up his gorgeous, flexing muscles to his face. I'm not nice, he tells me. Slowly, we begin to stretch against each other, and it's more rolling friction. I've never felt anything like it. It confirms that no guy I've ever been with has done it right. Until now. He's frowning a little in concentration. It's got to be the angle he's created so easily that seems to nudge a little switch inside my body. Hey. He hits it again, and the pleasure is so intense a sob catches in my throat. Again and again. I've never played this game before. I have no strength to raise my arms to his shoulders. Every distinct slide of his body into mine is taking me one step closer to something I'm fairly sure will kill me. Are you tired? I try to be considerate, but instead he picks up the pace. Sweat begins to mist my skin. My hands scrabble for purchase on the sheets. If I'm a dead weight, it doesn't seem to bother him. All I can do is press my shoulders against the mattress and try to survive this. I'm dying. I warn him. Josh, I'm dying. Josh lifts one of my ankles to rest on his shoulder. His arm hugs my leg, and he studies my face with interest as he increases his pace further. His eyebrows pinch together. The staring game is the absolute best when Josh is hitting my lifelong, non-existent G-spot, the one that exists now. Holy, holy. Josh? When he laughs in response, it's nearly my undoing. Here's my problem. This doesn't happen. First sex with someone is awkward, and you take turns and try to work out each other's likes and dislikes. There's no simultaneous wet, dirty screwing and trying to delay your orgasm. But I am, and he knows it. Lucy, quit holding off. I'm not, I protest, but for my lie, he increases his force. I babble a thank you. You're welcome, he tells me, and angles me higher. I have no idea how he's not tired. I will write a thank you card to his personal trainer. If my hand can ever grip a pen again, I bite my lip. I can't let this end. I tell him so. Forever. Do this forever, I beg. I'm near tears. Don't stop. Stubborn, aren't you, Shortcake? I can't let this end. Please, Josh. Please. Please, please. He presses his cheek against my calf in such a sweetly affectionate gesture. It won't end, he tells me. I can see he's starting to lose himself a little. His eyes are lit in a bright haze, and I can see him raise them to the ceiling, praying for something. His gorgeous skin is glowing gold in the lamplight. It's a smooth, deep rolling thrust like any of the others, but I break. It's not a sweet, tame thing sweeping over me. My teeth snap together. I grip onto him and wring myself out. The anguished sound I make probably wakes every single person in the hotel, but I can't hold it in. It's violent. I nearly kick him in the jaw, but he grabs my foot and holds onto me. The pleasure boils over, my body twists, squeezes, shakes me out, and I'm out of my mind crazy for Joshua Templeman. He's right. This will not be enough. I need days of this. Weeks, years, millions of years. I'm falling, completely falling, and I look up as he falls too. He leans down against my leg, and I feel him shaking in release. He looks down at me, eyes suddenly shy, and I raise my hand to stroke his cheek. He lowers me down carefully. I can't imagine how I'll let him go. I wrap my arms around his shoulders and press my mouth to his eyebrow, and my chest has a cleaned-out feeling like I've run a few miles. He must feel like he's done a triathlon. He looks up at me. "How you doing?" he whispers softly. "I'm a ghost. I'm dead." "I didn't know I was lethal," he says, and begins to pull away from me, achingly slowly. I beg and plead and say, "No, no, no." I'm an addict, completely hooked, already wanting my next fix while the current one is still running brightly through my veins. My body tries to hold on to him, but he kisses my forehead and apologizes. "I'm sorry, I gotta," he says, and walks away into the bathroom. I watch his backside and drop back into the pillows. Best sex of my entire life. Best backside I have ever seen. "Is that a fact?" he says from the other room. Seems I said it aloud. I lay my forearm over my eyes and try to regulate my breathing. I feel the mattress dip, and he pulls the blankets up over my chilling skin and turns off the lamp. "Now you're going to be unbearable. But goddamn, Josh, goddamn," I'm slurring. "Goddamn yourself," he says, and I'm tugged into the cradle of his arms. I press my cheek against him, delighting in his sweat. "Let's work out a game plan for when we wake up. I can't handle it if you go weird on me. We'll say good morning politely, then we'll do it again. I sound like I've had a stroke." I fall asleep with my ear pressed to his chest, listening to him laugh. I somehow survive until morning. I'm washing my hands when I glance up at the mirror. Oh, shit.
What?
I open the door a crack. The room is dimly lit by strobes of lights through the heavy curtains. I forgot to take off my makeup. I look like Alice Cooper again. My eye makeup is smudged black, and it makes my eyes look milky blue and lurid.
Again? You've looked like Alice Cooper before?
Yeah, the morning after I was sick. I nearly screamed when I saw myself. I brush my teeth and get my hair into a bun.
I like when you look a little wrecked.
Well, you'd like me right now, then. I'm in the shower and trying in vain to get the tiny packet of soap open when I hear the door creak and he's joining me, calmly, like we do this every day. Lust electrifies me, the strangest mix of joy and fear.
"It's a shortcake-sized soap,"
he comments, taking it from me and biting the package. He pinches the little coin of soap out and holds it up between his forefinger and thumb.
"I am going to enjoy this."
I am so dazzled by the sight of his velvety gold skin being streaked with water, I can't do anything for a few minutes except stare, my tongue peeking out the corner of my mouth like a hungry dog. The water channels down between each muscle before overflowing and sheening the flat plains. The shading of hair begins in the center of his chest, fanning outward to his nipples and moving downward in a thin line toward his navel. After being bombarded with a million billboards of shiny men in their underwear, I nearly forget men have hair. I follow the water down, the thicker hair, the imposing jut of his erection, all of it wet. Beautifully veined, enough to make my knees lose their strength. He was inside me. I need it again. I need it so many times I lose count. I shake my head. I have to close my eyes to remember how to speak English. He's too much. I can't have possibly captured this big golden creature inside a glass hotel shower, and he's looking at me with those eyes I love so much.
Oh no, I'm hideous, he whispers, mock tragic, and I feel the soap press against my collarbone. It starts to swirl in a little circle, sticky then slick. My personal trainer was so sure this disguise would help with women. What a fucking waste of time and energy. I drag my eyes open, and they must look like I've been in an opium den because he laughs. I press my thumb into the smile line on his cheek. You're gorgeous. Beautiful. I can't believe you. I back away until I'm pressed against the tiles to get a better view, and now it's his turn to look at every wet inch of me. My arms ache with the effort it takes to not cover myself. His perfect muscles make me look very squishy in comparison. His eyes darken as he looks at me from head to toe. Get over here, he says faintly. I take his hand when he holds it out. What a way to start the day. Showering with my colleague and nemesis. As soon as the thought materializes, I know it's so outdated. I can't keep lying to myself. He tugs me away from the freezing tile and faces me toward the spray, rechecking the temperature before he pushes me under. Then he puts his arms around me from behind and gives me what can only be described as a cuddle. I press back firmer against his arousal to feel him groan. How you doing? Not weird? Freaking out? He smooths lather under my breasts, down my ribs. He lifts my arm to inspect it, and we compare hand sizes. No, I'm fine. How come we don't have to worry about you getting weird? Most girls have to worry about guys making up an early morning training session so they can escape. And in this case, it's not implausible. I've been ready for this for a lot longer than you have, he says. He seems to know I don't want to get my hair wet and turns us a little. His slippery hands coast along my hips. Oh. Yes. How long? A very long time. I never guessed. I'm very secretive. He is gently amused. I capture the soap, which is fast on its way to becoming a translucent sliver. I stick it to my palm, and it gives me a good excuse to stroke over his body, while his tongue licks at the water droplets on my jaw. We look at each other, nose to nose, eyes half shut, and everything spirals out. The edges are nothing but cold air, but underneath this spray we get hotter and hotter until I'm sure I'm nearly sweating. It's this kiss. The minutes and hours fade away when I'm kissing Josh Templeman. There's no arc of the sun rising into the sky, no emptying hot water tank, no checkout time. He takes his time with me. He's a rare man, achieving the almost impossible. He kisses me into the present moment. It's something I've always had difficulty with in past relationships, turning off my brain. But here it's only us. Our lips find a rhythm, the gentle upswing of a pendulum, dropping away to the lightest curve, again and again, until there's nothing left for me in this world but his body, mine, and the water spilling over us, destined to refill a cloud. He makes words like intimacy seem inadequate. Maybe it's the way he uses his thumb to tilt my face, the other fingers splayed behind my ear, into my hair. When I try to gasp a mouthful of air, he breathes it into me. My head rolls to the side, dreamy and heavy, and he cups my jaw. I look up at him, and a starburst of emotion expands inside me. I think he sees it in my eyes, because he smiles. Nothing reminds me of how big his hands are, like having them on my body. He cups my ribs in his palms, then slides up to show me how perfectly I fill his hands. When I can't handle much more, he turns me to the wall and his fingers splay wings across my shoulder blades. Nails scratch down smoothly, and he's whispering against my neck. He's telling me I'm beautiful. The most delicious strawberry shortcake. I'm the taste he'll never get out of his mouth. And that he wants me to be sure, completely sure, before I make a decision about us. He's licking the water from my shoulders as he eases one broad palm in between my thighs. I feel my foot slide across the tiles an inch. Two. I shiver, and he puts an arm across my collarbones. At the first touch of his fingertip, I hear the sound I make echo around us. He begins to wind me tighter with each gentle circle he draws, and I reach behind me, capturing him in return. Our joint moan creates a cavernous buzz against the tiles. "Give everything to me," he says into my ear. I repeat it back to him. I've got nothing but wet, hot muscle against me, all around me, his mouth nipping at my earlobe and his strong thrust into my inadequately small hand. He doesn't seem to mind. In fact, he's starting to groan. I've got problems of my own, like trying to not make so much noise people outside our room can hear me. It's surprisingly difficult, given the heavenly amount of friction he is giving me. "Shush," Josh half laughs. I begin to teeter, and his teeth scrape the nape of my neck. I tighten my grip on him. We both stretch taut and snap at virtually the same moment. This one is an unfurling bloom. His cheek is resting on the tile above me, and we wordlessly look at each other as we shake. It's a strange thing, watching each other come apart. I have a feeling I could get used to this. There's no possible way to adequately end a moment like this. How does one transition back to reality? This hotel room needs a commemorative plaque. Oh, shit. Breakfast is soon. We gotta hurry. I need to pack my bag. Let's skip it. His hands toy with the curve of my waist and hips. Up, down, in, out. Your mom will be waiting. Come on. No, he yells unhappily, and his hands slide up my shoulders. No, I tell him in return, and get out of the shower, evading his hands. I wrap myself in a towel and check the time beside the bed. Come on, 15 minutes. Hurry, hurry. I'll book the room for another day. We can stay for hours. We could live here. Josh, I like your mom. And I don't know if I'm lame for wanting to make her happy. And I don't know if I'll ever see her again after today. I know she misses you. Maybe that's my role in this whole weekend, to force you to be with your family again. How sweet, forcing me to do things I don't want to. And of course you'll see her again. Fine. Put it this way. I was invited to breakfast, and I'm going. I'm starving. You sexed all of my energy out. You do what you want. I managed to get some mascara on and half of my top lip done in flamethrower. Then he eases up behind me, and I look at us in the mirror. The differences between us have never been more stark or more erotic. The contrast of me against his large, muscled glory almost breaks my resolve. He gathers my hair away from the side of my neck and drops his mouth in a kiss. We make eye contact in the mirror, and I let out a broken breath. I want to tell him, yes, rent this room for the rest of our lives. If I had more time, I could make you love me. The realization has me by the throat. I'd have to be blind to not see the light of affection in his eyes as he wraps his arms tighter and begins kissing the side of my neck. I'd have to be 1,000 years old to forget the way he kisses me. It's the fresh new bud of something that could one day be something remarkable, but I have severe doubts that it could survive in the real world. This bubble we're in, it's not reality. I wish it was, and I wish we lived here. All of this I should say out loud to him, but I don't have the courage. I close my eyes. We can have breakfast and then drive back to your apartment at warp speed. Fine. Nice lipstick, by the way. I manage to get the rest done, and I blot once. He takes the tissue before I can scrunch it up. He holds it up to admire it. Like a heart. How about you buy a little white canvas and I'll kiss it for you? Something to remember me by? I give him a cute wink to keep the tone light. The sarcastic rejoinder that I am expecting never eventuates, and instead he turns and walks out of the bathroom. When I come out a few minutes later with my makeup bag under my arm, he's dressed in jeans and a red t-shirt. I've never seen you in red. How come every color in the flippin' rainbow suits you? He puts my cell phone near my purse and the white rose he saved from his lapel. You just think they do. He zips his bag and stands at the window, looking out at the water. I dig in my bag for my own jeans and the black cashmere sweater I'm glad I packed. The air down here is colder, fresher than I'm used to. I'm getting dressed and he's not watching. I hop slightly to get the jeans zipped up, and he doesn't turn. I loudly squirt perfume into my cleavage, and he doesn't even flare a nostril. Breakfast is going to be fine.
Yeah, sure, he says faintly.
I stick my feet into some flats and decide to leave my hair in its big, messy, damp bun. I walk up behind him and hug his waist, resting my cheekbone against the lower curve of his shoulder blade. Tell me what's wrong.
I'm a one-night stand. This is everything I've been trying to avoid. I've been trying to build something, not give you some sense of closure.
No. Hey, how have I made you feel this way? I tug on his elbow until he faces me.
You're constantly talking like it's already over. A lipstick kiss to remember you by? Why am I going to need reminding, exactly?
We're not working together much longer?
I haven't wanted you this long, and gone through so much, and given up so much, to have you for one night. It's not enough.
He's right, of course. The interview result hangs over us like a scythe. A flash of impatience hits me. Can I stay at your place tonight? It's all I can think of to say. Can I sleep in your bed?
I guess, he says sulkily, and I tug him by the loops on his jeans over to his suitcase.
I look back at the bed. How so much could have changed in one space? Maybe he's thinking the same thing. He kisses my eyebrow so gently, I feel tears begin to prick behind my eyes. I catch a glimpse of the receipt when we check out. It was roughly a week's rent for this magical hotel room. He slashes his signature like Zorro onto it and hugs me close. My cheek presses against his perfect pectoral.
And did you have a nice day?
The elegantly groomed receptionist is smiling a little too widely at Josh as she processes the checkout. She seems to be willfully ignoring my presence, or maybe she's just dazzled. I look at her slicked back blonde coil hairdo. Her chalky pink lipstick is too bright against her tan.
Hotel Barbie.
Yes, thanks, he replies absently. Great water pressure in the shower.
I look up at his face and watch the corner of his mouth quirk, the little smile line deepening. The receptionist is definitely imagining him in the shower. Her eyes stray from bicep to computer screen, screen to his face. She staples and folds and searches for the perfect little envelope for his receipt, even though the customer at the next counter didn't get one. She fiddles and does a dozen other little things so she can look at little segments of him. She tells him about their loyalty program and how his next check-in will be with a free bottle of wine, and probably her draped across his bed. She reconfirms his address and phone number. I'm gimlet-eyed with annoyance. He doesn't notice and begins kissing my temple. Who can blame her, though? A man built like this, with a face like this, being so ridiculously sweet and tender? I'd die a little, too, watching this, and I'm the one on the receiving end. It's like seeing a bruised nightclub bouncer cuddling a tutu-clad toddler, or a cage fighter blowing a kiss to his sweetheart in the front row. Brute, raw masculinity contrasted with gentleness is the most attractive thing on earth. Josh is the most attractive thing on earth. I watch her eyes harden speculatively as she glances at me. I spread my hand across his chest. It says, "Mine." The tiny, jealous cavewoman in me can't resist.
Shall we bring your car?
Yes, Josh says at the same moment I say, no. No, we're having breakfast. Can we leave our bags here?
Of course.
She checks Josh's bare left hand. My bare left hand.
Thank you, Mr. Templeman.
I need a fake wedding band on you if we ever came back. I grumble as we walk through the lobby to the restaurant. Josh nearly trips over his own foot.
Why on earth would you say that?
We walk past the ballroom, and I can see cleaners taking down the huge bunches of Mindy pink balloons. The receptionist wanted to jump on you? I can't blame her, but sheesh. I was standing right there. What am I, invisible? Josh looks at me sideways. How primal. We push through the glass double doors, and he pulls me to one side. I crane around the doorframe. I can see his family. I raise my hand to wave, but he tugs me back and scolds me unintelligibly. It's a buffet. My delight is evident in my voice. Look at those croissants, plain and chocolate. Quick, there's not many left. I am going to appeal to you one last time. Let's just go. Things went pretty well yesterday, family-wise. Let's cut our losses. And what? Screech out of here like Thelma and Louise? They all loved you. I'm immensely lovable. Josh, come on. Croissants? I'm here with you. No one will hurt you as long as I'm here. I've got my invisible paintball gun. Take me in there, feed me pastry, and then drive me back to your pretty blue bedroom. He presses a little kiss to my lips. I look over my shoulder at the reception desk. Come on, be brave. Forget about your dad and focus on your mom. Be a gentleman. I'm going in. I weave through the room, and I have no idea if he's following. If he's not, this is going to be a little awkward. Chapter 27. At the table by the window sits Elaine and Anthony, and Mindy and Patrick. Everyone stops talking when I approach. I wave like a dork. Everyone looks surprised. Hi. Lucy, hello. Elaine recovers first and looks at the table. Oh, there are no spare chairs. We're barely 5 minutes late. They clearly weren't expecting us to turn up. Josh is dawdling, thankfully. Quick, quick. I start looking around at other tables. More chairs, Elaine gasps. She understands perfectly. If he walks over here and there are no seats for us, he'll shrivel up. Anthony sits at the daddy end of the table and continues reading his folded-up newspaper. No, wait, medical journal. Jeez. He makes no indication he's aware of any other people in the room. There's a great deal of shuffling, and I manage to borrow spare chairs from a nearby table. By the time Josh arrives with a plate of croissants and a cup of tea, we're all sitting as casually as we can, trying to slide the plates back in front of their original owners. Good morning, everyone chimes. Hi, he says cautiously, and puts the plate and tea in front of me. I got you the last ones. It's a plate filled with croissants and strawberries. He strokes his hand down the side of my neck. Sweet of you. Thanks. I'll just get something, he says, and retreats. Elaine watches him, part sad, part amused, and looks at Anthony. I smile at Mindy to show I'm not upset anymore. I probably have a nuclear post-orgasmic glow. She tentatively smiles back. How do you feel, Mrs. Templeman? I didn't put too much thought into the question, but the words Mrs. Templeman make her physically jolt. Maybe I'm exceptionally empathetic, but I feel like I've dropped a bombshell. The words ring in my ears, off the walls, right through my bones. Mrs. Templeman, how primal indeed. Wrecked. I'm so tired I feel like I'm dreaming, but in a good way. She breaks into a smile and looks at the tablecloth. Mrs. Templeman, it sounds so... She covers her face with her hands and sighs and laughs and dorks. Get out of my head, Mindy. Sorry, we took a smaller table, Elaine begins, but I shake my head. It's okay. I had to use my lasso to get him down here. I mime swinging a rope over my head and the women burst out laughing. The men sit silently, reading and eating. I can imagine it. Little cowgirl dragging him behind her, bucking and snorting. I don't know why he makes such a big deal of everything. Patrick interjects mildly, taking a quick, wincing mouthful of his coffee. I have a feeling he's always so busy he eats all of his meals in painful, scalding gulps and swallows. Maybe it's a doctor thing. Ingest the fuel rather than enjoy it. He's shy. Leave him alone. Patrick frowns at my kid sister impudence and then laughs. He glances at Josh. Shy, huh? I can see the realization dawning across his face, like it did mine yesterday. Shyness takes so many different forms. Some people are shy and soft, some shy and hard. Or in Josh's case, shy and wrapped in military-grade armor. Josh, Lucy, thank you for the gift, Mindy says when Josh takes his seat. She catches my eye and smiles, clearly thinking I chose it. I never did see what he ended up choosing. I take a huge bite of croissant. He's got one arm across the back of my chair, his warm hands spread across my shoulder. The most beautiful set of Waterford crystal champagne glasses, engraved with our initials, and two bottles of Moët. Good job, Josh. The wedding was nice, Josh tells her. I look at his eyes as they assess each other. It's probably the first time they've faced each other since the breakup. I almost quiver with concentration, trying to detect any residual heartbreak, lust, resentment, loneliness. If I had whiskers, they would be twitching. Thanks, Mindy replies. She looks at her wedding ring again, and then at Patrick with such helpless devotion, I look at Josh sharply. If ever he was going to react badly, it would be now. He smiles, looks at his plate, and then looks at me. He kisses my temple, and I'm convinced. How have you kept Lucy a secret from us all? Mindy says as she cuts her grapefruit. Oh, you know, I keep her in my basement. It's not as bad as it sounds. He's made it comfy down there. Everyone laughs, except Anthony, naturally. I have a refreshing realization. I'm not trying. It explains why I'm so comfortable sitting here, eating with strangers. If they like me, fine. If not, I can live. But I feel the same relaxed, slouchy feeling I get when sitting with my family. If I tilt my head just right, I can't see Anthony at all. Mindy lists some of the other gifts they received. Patrick's new gold band winks in the pale sunshine filtering in through the clouds, and he occasionally curls his thumb in to touch it. Mindy watches him, tenderness in her eyes. Josh's breakfast is two poached eggs, a slice of wheat toast, and a heap of wilted spinach. He drinks his coffee in two swallows. I look at my own plate and pinch my stomach under the table. His body is a temple. Mine will be a hut made of butter at this rate. More coffee? I get up and decide to bring myself back some more fruit. I can't just sit there eating pastry. He snags my wrist and looks up at me. Stay, his eyes tell me. I pat him kindly, and he reluctantly relinquishes his mug. I'll be right back. Anyone else? I take my time fiddling with the coffee machine. Everything's a little stilted, and it does occur to me that I'm essentially an intruder. I'm the only one at the table who's not a Templeman. As I struggle with the long plastic tongs to get another slice of watermelon, I am dimly aware of sharp tones. I'm piling my plate with a bunch of grapes when realization dawns. Oh, shit. I hurry back to the table and put down my plate and Josh's mug. Mindy is frozen, eyes frightened, and Patrick looks resigned. But what I want to know is, why would you throw away pre-med? Any monkey can get an MBA. Anthony has laid aside his breakfast reading and is staring down Josh, gimlet-eyed. Seriously, I was away from the table for maybe 2 minutes. How did this escalate so quickly? I suppose a nuclear bomb has one red button and that doesn't take long to press. I put my hand on the back of Josh's neck, like I'm holding an attack dog by the collar. For fuck's sake, If you knew anything about it, you'd know it's almost impossible to complete an executive MBA while working full-time. And I did it. And I was in the top 2%. I got 4 job offers, and 2 of those companies still call me.
I'm surprised you finished it, if it was so hard, Anthony says. I thought your favorite hobby was quitting.
Hey, I blurt. I'm still standing, and I realize I have a hand on my hip.
Lucy, they're just... Elaine is unsure of what to do.
Maybe you should talk to Josh outside, Anthony. People at nearby tables are all sitting with cutlery lowered in various stages of avid interest or awkward avoidance. Josh laughs meanly.
Why? So we can have a good old-fashioned fistfight? He'd just love that.
Anthony rolls his eyes.
You need to...
toughen up? Is that what you're about to say to me? What you've said to me for as long as I've been alive? Josh glances up at me in exasperation.
Now, can we go?
I think maybe you should talk this out. Another 5 years might go by.
She's one of those touchy-feely types, Anthony says to Elaine. Fantastic.
Josh's eyes narrow dangerously.
Don't talk about her.
Well, she can't resist bringing herself into it. Be quiet, Elaine says to Anthony. She's furious. All I asked was for you to be civil. Keep your mouth shut. I look at Anthony, and he looks at me. His eyes are full of derision as he runs his eyes from the top of my head down. Then he sniffs and looks out the window, obeying his wife, mouth pursed shut. Oh boy. I'm not putting up with this twice in my life, and certainly not from another Templeman. My temper snaps. Your son is incredibly talented, focused, ridiculously intelligent. He is instrumental in keeping a publishing house running.
What? Licking stamps? Answering phones?
We lock eyes. I bark a laugh. Is that seriously what you think he does?
I'm not going to sit here and be spoken to like this by you, young woman. I've seen his email signature block. Assistant to the CEO. I don't know who you think you are.
He's attempting to reestablish his authority. Maybe I'll sit down and be a good little girl. Josh's instinct to protect me is making him rise up out of his chair, but I wave him back. I got this. I'm the person who knows your own offspring better than you do. He's the person the finance and sales divisions report to. They're scared fucking shitless of him. I once had a 45-year-old man beg me in the hall outside the boardroom to pass on the documents so he wouldn't have to attend. I've seen entire teams scurrying like ants, double-checking, triple-checking their figures. Even then, Josh will always find the mistake. Then usually someone takes a stress day. Anthony begins to bluster something, but I cut him off. I'm so worked up I could strangle him. Honestly, I could wrap my hands around his neck and squeeze. I am Lara Croft. Guns raised, eyes blazing with retribution. The reason Bexley Books didn't completely implode before the merger is Josh recommended that their workforce be reduced by 35%. I've hated him for it. It was cold-blooded. And he can be, you have no idea. But it meant another 120 people kept their jobs, paid their mortgages. So don't you dare try to make out like he's nothing. Oh, and I know for a fact Josh was integral in the merger negotiations. One of the corporate lawyers told me in the kitchen he was, quote, a fucking hard ass. I can't seem to stop. It's like I'm purging something. His boss, who's the co-CEO in title only, is a fat, sleazy toad so out of his mind on prescriptions he can barely tie a shoelace. Josh is who keeps it all running. Both of us do. I look at them all. Josh is digging his fingers into the waistband of my jeans. I'm sorry I'm making a scene, and I like all of you, except you. I cut a look at Anthony. I spend more time with him than anyone, and I have to tell you, you don't know what you've got. You've got Josh. He's an awkward, difficult asshole. I hate him almost half the time, and he drives me mental, and it's clearly hereditary. You gave me the exact same look Josh first did when I met him. top to bottom, out the window. You know everything about me? You know everything about him? I don't think so. I have been trying to give him a boost. Some people need a push, Anthony says. You can't have it both ways. You can't completely neglect him, yet trash his choices. Anthony raises a hand to his brow and rubs it like he's getting a headache. My father pushed my younger brother. And how did he enjoy that? His eyes flick sideways. Not too much, I'm guessing. He's not a doctor. Deal with it. Anthony goggles at me. But I want you to know something. He could be, if he wanted to. He could be anything he fucking wanted to. Nothing is by mistake. Nothing is because he's not good enough. It's his choice. I sit down in a huff. Mindy and Patrick look at each other, mouths open. Hell, the entire room is sitting with their mouths open. I hear someone start to clap, then hastily stop. I'm sorry, Elaine. I take a huge mouthful of tea, nearly spilling it down my top. My hands are shaking. Don't apologize for defending him like that, she says faintly. I suppose what she means by like that is like a rabid lioness. I find the courage to look at Josh. He looks completely shell-shocked. Anthony trails off, and I level my best stare on him. The same withering, emotionless glare I've given his son 1,000 times before. He clears his throat and looks at his cutlery. Yes, Dr. Templeman. Care to share? My audacity is breathtaking. I don't know much about your work, Josh. Everyone's jaw drops even further. Mine doesn't. I will never give him the satisfaction. I stare into his eyes and mentally twist a rusty fish knife into his gut. I raise an eyebrow. I'd be interested in talking to you more about it, Josh. I interject. Now that you know he's successful? Now you know that he'll almost certainly be promoted to chief operating officer of a major publishing house? You've got something to tell your buddies at golf now. Squash. Patrick tells me in an aside, he plays squash. I have given Anthony the dressing down of a lifetime. He is unable to speak. It is wonderful. You should love him and be proud of him even if he's in the mailroom, even if he were unemployed and crazy and living under a bridge. We're leaving now. Elaine, it was a pleasure. I loved meeting you. Mindy, Patrick, congratulations again and enjoy your honeymoon. Sorry I made a scene just now. Anthony, it's been real. I stand up. Now, we screech out of here like Thelma and Louise. Josh stands and goes to kiss his mother's cheek. She grasps helplessly at his wrist. But when will I see you? She looks up at Josh, but she also looks to me. I can see Josh's jaw tightening, and I can almost hear the excuses forming on his tongue. He might drop off the radar for the Templeman family altogether. The next thing I say surprises even me, especially given the fact I've essentially just said goodbye to them all for the last time. If you can come up to the city soon, we could meet you for lunch. We could go see a movie after. Anthony, you're invited too. His jaw, which has been hinging loosely, sways in the breeze. But only if you're prepared to be civil and start to get to know your son again. I think you know there's going to be no more ragging on Josh, except by me, because he loves it. You and I are going to have a discussion, outside, now. Elaine gets to her feet and points to a French door leading to the side gardens. Anthony looks like a man walking to the gallows. I know a fellow rabid lioness when I see her. I take Josh's hand, and we weave through our spellbound audience. No charge, the cashier tells me. Lady, that was better than theater. I retrieve our bags from the receptionist, thankfully not the lustful blonde this time. I probably would have roundhouse kicked her head off. Walking together, matching our footfalls, we exit the lobby like two television district attorneys gunning for justice. I ask the valet for our car and turn. Okay, let me have it. I just made an incredibly embarrassing scene. I can see people talking about me as they wait for their taxis. I'm going to star in 20 different retellings of that restaurant incident. Josh picks me up off the ground. Thank you, he tells me. Thank you so much. When we kiss, I hear some applause. You're not mad I rescued you? Boys don't need rescuing. This one did. And I'll even let you choose which you want to be. Thelma or Louise, he tells me, setting me on my feet as the car arrives. You're the good-looking one. I guess you're Thelma. He slides the driver's seat back. We drive about half a block before Josh bursts out laughing. You told my dad it had been real. Like I was a bad TV script writer who thought that's how kids talk? Exactly. It was so priceless. He wipes a tear away with his thumb. I feel bad about your mom, though. She looked so completely stricken. Don't you worry. She is going to kick the shit out of him for that. I have no doubt. It's why she and I get along so well. He thinks for a few moments while driving. I don't know how I can move on from this with my dad. Nothing's insurmountable. I try to believe my own words. I roll down the window a little so the breeze is on my face. The sun is warming my legs and Josh is smiling again. I do not even let myself think about how it is all going to end. If the drive normally takes 5 hours, I swear Josh cuts it down to 3. But the hours mean nothing to us as we wind through the countryside, leaving the sea salt wind behind us. The memory is lit by the sun through the trees we drive through, nothing but lemons and copper tones scattering across our arms, lighting our eyes up blue. His sapphire, mine turquoise. I see my face in the car's side mirror, and I barely recognize myself. I've changed. I'm someone new today. Today is a momentous day. I'll always remember the drive home as a movie montage, and I knew I was in one. Each detail was vividly bright. I knew I'd need the memories one day. This montage is directed by someone French. A convertible would have been their preference, but the windows are down, so that's something. The air is unseasonably warm and scented like honeysuckle and cut grass. The montage stars this pretty girl, flamethrower red mouth, smiling over at a beautiful man. He's looking so achingly cool in his sunglasses, you immediately buy a pair for yourself. He lifts her hand to his mouth and kisses it, tells her something charming and makes her laugh. It's the sort of moment you want to hit pause on and buy whatever it is they're selling. Happiness, a better life, red lipstick and those sunglasses. The soundtrack should be a lilting indie affair, equal parts hopeful and with a broken, bittersweet lyric hook that makes your heart hurt for some unknown reason. But instead, it's scored by the 1980s hair metal I found in an incriminating iPod playlist titled Gym. You seriously got those abs while listening to Poison and Bon Jovi? I crow, and he can't deny it. It's just us. Windows down, stereo cranked, the road curling in front of us like a tongue. We sing along. The lyrics for songs I haven't heard in years fall out of my mouth. His fingers drum the steering wheel. Life right now is easier than breathing. We never stop the car. It's like if we stop, even for a rest break, reality will catch us. We're bank robbers, kids running away from boarding school, eloping teenage sweethearts. There's a bottle of water in my bag and Josh's tin of mints. We share, and it's better than a banquet. I will eventually confess to myself why this montage means so much. I could try to believe it was because of Monday morning looming and the one prize dangling above two worthy recipients. Maybe it was because of how alive I felt, so completely young and filled to bursting with the scary, thrilling certainty my life was about to change in a big way. Possibly, it was the thrill of sticking it to the man and the heady rush of standing up to someone terrifying. The thrill of rescuing someone. Being the strong one. Carrying someone. Coddling and protecting. Defending like a lioness. maybe it was the smell of spring in the air, the field of four-leaf clovers we pass, red roses against a fence, leather seats and Josh's skin. No, it was something else. The new knowledge of something irreversible, permanent. It cycled through my head with each revolution of the car's wheels, each pulse of blood in my frail, whisper-thin veins. At any moment, a tiny valve could buckle under the pressure of the cholesterol from my croissants. At any moment, I could die. But I don't. I fall asleep, my cheek against the warm seat, my face turned toward him, like it always has been. Like it always will. I open my eyes a tiny crack. We're in a parking garage. "We're home," he says. I think the unthinkable. I should have been thinking it all along. My eyes slide closed and I feign sleep. "You need to wake up," he whispers. A kiss on my cheek. A miracle. I love Joshua Templeman. Chapter 28. We walk into his apartment, and he puts my overnight bag with his in the bedroom, like I am returning home. I use the bathroom, and when I come out, he's making me a cup of tea with the concentration of a scientist. He takes one look at my face. "Oh no. Don't tell me." My stomach drops out of my body, and I grip the edge of the counter. He knows. He's a mind reader. My eyes are love hearts. "You're completely freaking out," he states flatly. I can't do anything but make awkward eye slides and lip nibbles. I look at his front door. I can't get past him. He'll be too quick. "No chance. Get on the couch," he scolds. "Get. Go on." I slip my shoes off and go, and scrunch myself in a ball on his couch, hugging the ribbon cushion. He's right. I am completely freaking out. It's the mother of all freakouts. I've completely lost my voice. I talk to myself in the privacy of my head. "You love him. You love him. You always have. More than you've ever hated him. Every day, staring at this man, knowing every color and expression and nuance. Every game you've ever played has been to engage with him. Talk to him. Feel his eyes on you, to try to make him notice you." "I'm such an idiot," I breathe. I open my eyes and nearly scream. He's standing over me with a mug and a plate. "I simply can't condone this level of freakout," he says, and gives me a sandwich. He puts the mug on the coffee table. He disappears for a minute, then comes back with my gray fleecy blanket. It's like he knows I've had some kind of shock. He tucks me in on all sides, brings me an extra pillow. Who knows what my face looks like? I avoided looking at myself in the bathroom. My teeth begin to chatter, and I reach for what is quite a good-looking sandwich. No shoddy workmanship here. It's even cut in half diagonally. My favorite. I chew like a chipmunk, using my tiny, prehensile paws to rip off the crust. I've got bright, shifty button eyes and puffed-up cheeks. "You have not said a word to me since I woke you up. You look shell-shocked. Your hands are shaking. Low blood sugar? Bad dreams? Carsick?" He discards his plate, his sandwich untouched. "You're still tired. You have stomach pains." Josh begins to rub my feet through the blanket. When he speaks again, it's so low I can barely hear. "You've realized what a mistake you've made, being with me." "No," I blurt through my mouthful. I close my eyes. The worried line on his brow is killing me. "No." I feel terrible. I'm ruining what was the beautiful bubble of energy from our drive home. "Today is Sunday," I respond after a lot of deliberation.
"Tomorrow is Monday," he returns.
We both sip from our mugs. The staring game has commenced, and I am welling up with questions I am dying to ask, but I have no idea how to go about it. Truth or dare, he says. He always knows the exact right thing to say.
Dare.
Coward. Okay, I dare you to eat the entire jar of hot mustard I have in my fridge. I was hoping for a sexy dare. I'll get you a spoon.
Truth.
Why are you freaking out? He takes a bite of sandwich. I sigh so deeply my lungs hurt. I wasn't ready for this, and I am having some scary feelings and thoughts. He studies me, looking for any trace of lie. He can't find any. It's abbreviated, but it's the truth.
Truth or dare?
Truth, he says, unblinking. There is some low afternoon light coming through the windows, and I can see the cobalt facets of his eyes. I have to close mine a moment until the pain of his beauty eases.
What are the marks in your planner?
It pops into my head. He didn't answer last time. I doubt he will now. He smiles and looks at his plate. It's a bit juvenile. I'd expect nothing less of you. I record whether you're wearing a dress or skirt. D or S. I make a mark when we argue, and I make a mark when I see you smile at someone else. Also when I wish I could kiss you. The dots are just my lunch break.
Oh. Why?
My stomach trills. He considers. When you get so little of someone, you take what you can get.
How long have you done it?
Since the second day of B&G. The first day was a bit of a blur. I've always meant to compile some stats. Sorry. Saying it aloud sounds insane.
I wish I'd thought of doing it, if it makes you feel better. I'm equally insane.
You cracked the shirt code pretty quick.
Why do you even wear them in sequence?
I wanted to see if you noticed. And once you did, it pissed you off.
I've always noticed.
Yeah, I know.
He smiles and I smile too. I feel him take my foot in his hands and he begins to rub. Those days of the week shirts have been oddly comforting. I lie back and look at the ceiling. No matter what's going on, I know I'm going to walk in and see white. Off-white. Cream, pale yellow. Mustard. Baby blue. Bedroom blue. Dove. Navy, black. I'm ticking them off on my fingers.
You forgot. Poor old mustard has been replaced. Anyway, you won't be seeing my stupid shirt soon. Mr. Bexley has told the interview panel to have a decision by Friday.
But that's only a day after the interview. I thought maybe there would be a week or two of deliberation. I'm going to either be victorious or unemployed next Friday. I feel sick.
He's told them if they haven't worked out who's the right candidate 5 minutes into the interview, they're morons.
He better not try to sway the interview panel. We need this to be fair. Ugh, I hadn't thought about reporting to Mr. Bexley directly without you as the buffer. I tell you, Josh, the man has X-ray eyes.
I want to blind him with acid.
You keep a vial of acid in your drawer?
You should know. You've been snooping in my desk and planner.
There is censure in his tone, but his eyes remain friendly as he slides his thumb into my arch and makes me purr.
You'd resign, if I got the job.
He says it gently. Yes. I'm sorry, but I'd have to. At first, it was my pride making me say it, but now it's clearly the only option. I want you to know that if they decide you're a better fit for the role, I'll resign happily. I'll be happy for you, Josh, I swear. I know more than anyone how hard you've worked for it. I arch a little and sigh.
You'd be my boss. It'd be hot as hell, making out with the COO every chance I got, but we'd get caught for sure. But if you get it,
I can't expect you to resign, but I can't be your boss. I'd give you inappropriate tasks and Jeanette would have a stroke.
And if I were your boss, I'd work you so fucking hard. So fucking hard. I'd have dirty dreams all night. You told my parents I was probably about to be chief operating officer. Did you mean it? Or were you just adding to your long list of brags about me?
It's okay if you didn't mean it.
If I were the recruiting panel, I'd look at our CVs side by side and you'd probably edge me out. You're so good at what you do. I've always admired how well you work.
I rub my hand on my chest to try to relieve the ache. Not necessarily. It's not just the CVs. There's the interviews. You're charming. There's not a person alive who doesn't adore you instantly.
Says you. I've seen you in action. When you're making an effort, you're like a 1950s politician, smoother than smooth.
He laughs. But you love B&G. And everyone there hates me. That's your advantage over me. Plus, you have your top secret weapon Danny is spending his weekends on.
Yeah. I dart my eyes away.
It's got to do with ebooks. I'm not an idiot, Josh says.
Why can't you be an idiot for once? Just once I want to keep a secret from you.
You're keeping a secret from me right now. We haven't gotten to the root cause of your freakout.
And we're not going to.
I pull the blanket over my head altogether. Very mature, he comments and swaps my feet, squeezing my toes and circling his thumbs. You can't keep secrets from me for long. I know you too well. I'll get it out of you.
Well, apparently I'm a complete open ebook. I groan in the dark. Did Mr. Bexley tell you about my digitalization project? Please don't screw me on this, Josh. Please. My entire presentation is based on it.
Do you seriously think I'd do that to you?
No. Well, maybe. I expect a whip-crack response. He says nothing but continues to massage my foot. I flip the blanket off my face. Why didn't you smile at me when we first met and say, pleased to meet you? We could have been friends all this time. It feels like a tragedy. I've lost so much, and we have no time left.
We could never have been friends. I try to pull my foot back, but he holds on to it. So that's a sore point.
He squeezes the arch. I've always wanted to be friends with you. But you didn't smile back. You've been one up ever since.
I couldn't. If I'd let myself smile back and be friends with you, I probably would have fallen in love with you.
It's all the past tense of that statement that kills the leap of joy inside. Because he didn't. And he isn't. I try to brush over it.
You said that to me after the elevator kiss.
We'd never be friends.
I was angry at the time. I was delivering you to Danny, and you were looking hotter than hell.
Poor Danny. He's so nice.
You'll have to apologize for how you hung up on him.
He's been nothing but nice to me, and all I've done is give him two shitty dates and made him lose a Saturday.
He got to kiss you.
When he says that, Josh looks like he wants to destroy planets.
And he's not doing the freelance work completely out of the goodness of his heart.
Under different circumstances, he'd be a great boyfriend. Josh is making black, scary serial killer eyes at me.
Different circumstances?
Well, I'm assuming you're going to chain me in your basement and keep me as your sex slave. This conversation is like a tightrope. One misstep and he'll know. He'll know I'm in love, and then I'll wobble and fall. No safety net.
I don't have a basement.
Too bad for me.
I'll buy us a house with a basement.
Okay. Can I come with you when you house hunt? I smile despite the doomed sensation dripping into my blood. I love the energy we create between us when we banter like this. It's the most intense sensation of pleasure, knowing he'll always have the perfect response ready. I've never known anyone like him, as addictive to talk to as he is to kiss.
Truth or dare, he says after a bit.
It's not my turn.
Yes, it really is.
Truth, I have no choice. He'll dare me to eat the mustard again.
Do you trust me?
I don't know. I want to.
Truth or dare? He blinks. Truth. It's all truth from this point forward.
Have you ever lived here with a girlfriend?
No, I've never lived with anyone.
Why do you ask? Your bedroom is girly. Josh smiles to himself. You're such a moron sometimes. Thanks. Hey, should I go home? I don't have anything to wear tomorrow. Would you believe I own my own washer and dryer? How newfangled. I go into his bedroom and kneel on the floor to unzip my bag. I hope Elaine doesn't notice I'm in the same outfit. I'd say the only person at B&G who notices that much about you will be the same one who laundered those walk of shame clothes. I sit up on my heels and look at his bedroom. He's put the Smurf I gave him beside his bed. There's also white roses, petals unfurled and loose. He didn't have a vase, so he used a jar. I close my eyes. I can't move for a bit. I love him so much, it's like a thread piercing me, punching holes, dragging through, stitching love into me. I'll never be able to untangle myself from this feeling. The color of love is surely this robin's egg blue. When his feet appear in the doorway, I take my dirty clothes and hug them to my chest. No looking at my underwear. That would be rude, he agrees. I will close my eyes. I sit on his bed. I smooth my hands over the covers, twiddling the silky thread count. I push one fist into his pillow. He dreams. He lives. And he will do it all without me. He finds me sitting there with my head in my hands. Shortcake, he says, and I know he is genuinely regretful. It's the strangest sensation. I need to confide in him. He's the one person I should not trust, but I'm nearly bursting with the secret that I love him and it is hurting me. Talk to me. I want to know why you're upset. Let me work this out. I'm scared of you. I'm scared of him finding out my biggest, newest secret. He doesn't look offended. I'm scared of you, too. When our mouths touch, it's like it's for the first time. Now that I have this pale blue love running through me, the intensity is too much. I try to pull back, but he smoothly lays me back. Be brave, he tells me. Come on, Luce. My mouth is filled with my heart and his breath when we kiss again. I can feel myself trembling as he tastes my fear. Ah, he says, I think I'm beginning to see what the issue is. No, you don't. I twist my face away. The sun is setting outside on this confusing day, and the light filters through his filmy drapes, pearlescent and pretty. The entire moment is frozen, date-stamped and slotted into my memory vault. He kisses me like he knows me. Like he understands me. I raise my hand to push him away, and he links his fingers into mine. I bite him, and he smiles against my lips. I slide my knee up to get enough leverage to slide away, and he hooks a hand under my leg. You're beautiful when you're scared, he tells me. I can't speak as he trails his mouth to my ear. He sighs. My world narrows down a little more. When he kisses my pulse, I know he is thinking about all of my tiny inner miracles, and the first tear wells up in my eye. It slides down my cheek, down my neck. We're getting somewhere now, he tells me as he licks my tear. I raise my hands into his hair and press him to me as he presses soft kisses like stamps down my neck. Each pushes me deeper in love. When he smooths his hand down my torso, I wince. Let Dr. Josh take a look, he says, pulling off my sweater and t-shirt in one motion. He smooths a steady hand down my throat, over my bra, between my breasts, to my belly. The light in here is brightly diffused, and he can see every vein and pastel paintball bruise as he looks down at me, eyelashes fanned so perfectly I feel the next tear coming. I love him so much I can't hold it in much longer. I'm vibrating from it. I'm showering sparks. He makes it even harder to hold on when he speaks, fingers stroking my marred skin. I'm sorry you've been bruised so often because of me. I should have protected you from myself. I've been set to a default for a long time. Sort of like I attack before I can be attacked. You've been on the receiving end. Days, weeks, months, and you've handled it like no one else ever could have. I try to speak, but he shakes his head and continues. Every day, every minute, I've only ever been sitting there looking at you. What I've done to you has been the worst mistake of my life.
It's okay, I manage to say. It's okay.
It's not. I don't know how you've coped with me, and I'm sorry. He drops his mouth to the bruise on my ribs.
I forgive you.
You forget, I've been a complete bitch to you. But you never would have been if I'd just smiled back.
I wish you had.
My voice breaks traitorously. I may as well have said, I wish you loved me. I hold my breath. With his crazy intelligent brain, I know he's joining the dots seconds behind me. I struggle up the bed, but he crawls easily over me and lays my head on his pillow. It made no difference. I loved you the moment I saw you. I'm falling backward through his bed. He loops an arm around my waist. I jerk like he's caught me.
You love what? Me?
Lucinda Elizabeth Hutton. One and the same.
Me.
Lucy, heiress of the Sky Diamond Strawberries dynasty.
Me.
Could you show some ID so I can be certain? His eyes are lit, and the smile I love best of all is glowing on his face.
But I love you.
I can hear how incredulous I sound. He laughs. I know.
How do you always know everything?
I kick my feet against the mattress. I only figured it out a few minutes ago. Your heart has been breaking.
I can't hide anything from you. It's the worst.
I try to put my face into the pillow. You don't need to hide anything from me. He takes my chin in his fingers and kisses me.
You're scary. You'll hurt me.
I guess I'm a bit scary. But I will never hurt you again. Anyone who ever does will find out about scary.
You hate me.
I never have. Not for a second. I have always loved you.
Prove it.
There's no way you can.
I am satisfied that I've thrown out the unwinnable challenge.
He rolls onto his side and rests his cheek on his bicep. My heart is pounding. What's my favorite color?
Easy. Blue.
What kind of blue?
Bedroom blue.
I point at the wall.
The walls. Your shirt. My dress. Pale Tiffany blue.
He tugs me to sit, then goes to the end of the bed. He opens his wardrobe door, and I see all of the shirts hanging in color sequence.
Josh, you dork.
I start to laugh and point, but he grabs my ankles and drags me to the end of the bed. There's a full-length mirror, and I see myself, at long last, sitting on the bed in his robin's egg bedroom. His walls are the blue of my eyes.
I've been a bit slow.
But that's the prettiest blue in the world.
I know.
Good Lord, Lucinda. I thought I'd be busted the moment you saw this room. He sits on the bed behind me, one knee up, and I fall back into the perfect cradle of his body.
How somebody can't recognize their own eyes, I'll never know.
Seems I didn't recognize a few things.
Hey, Josh?
Yes, Shortcake.
You love me.
I see him smile in our reflection at the confusion and wonder in my tone. Since the moment I saw you. Since the moment you smiled at me, I felt like I was falling backward off a cliff. The feeling has never stopped. I've been trying to drag you down with me, in the worst, most ill-conceived and socially retarded way possible.
We've been so awful to each other.
I feel his cringe and his hands begin to stroke me.
I mean, how can we even begin to start again?
Time for a new game. The starting over game. I smile. Eyes bright. Dazzling, full of hope and certainty, this merger will be the most exciting, passionate, challenging thing ever to happen to me.
Nice to meet you. I'm Lucy Hutton.
Joshua Templeman. Please, call me Josh. I see the blinding flash of his smile in return,
and now I'm properly crying, tears running down my neck.
Josh, sounds like heaven coming out of your mouth.
Josh, please, we've been colleagues for 1 minute. You're rather flirtatious. Let me hang my coat.
He unclips my bra.
Allow me.
Thank you.
We are playing the staring game in the mirror, and his eyes begin to darken. He fills his hands with my white skin.
I grew up on a strawberry farm. It's named after me.
I love strawberries. I'm so lovesick, I eat them constantly. Can I nickname you Shortcake? It'll be a dead giveaway that I love you.
You love me? We've only met a minute ago.
I do. I'm sorry, but I work fast. I hope it's not too forward of me to say, but your eyes are incredible, Lucy. I die when you blink.
You're smooth.
What do you know? I love you too. So much. Every time your dark blue eyes hit me, I feel like I get a mild electric shock. I reach behind me to tug off his t-shirt. He helps me out and pulls it off.
I've been wondering since I met you, granted only minutes ago, what you've got under this shirt.
My goodness, your body. But I want you for your mind and your heart, not this impressive disguise.
He looks at the ceiling. I think I'll paint my bedroom this weekend. I'll probably feel annoyed the whole time I do it. And I'll happily farewell my current girlfriend, a tall, boring blonde called Mindy Thales. She's not you, and it eats me up. It makes the fact I sleep alone and desperately celibate in this Lucy Blue room even more romantic when I eventually tell you. He slides me in between his sheets and spoons behind me. My cheek is pillowed on his bicep, and he kisses the side of my neck. I'm shivering.
Sounds like a good plan.
It'll pay off.
Desperately, huh? So pray tell, what is the aim of the starting over game?
The same as all the others.
For you to love me.
Mine was to make you smile. How lame. I laughed my ass off every day on the drive home from work, if it makes you feel any better.
I guess. But you've won. I'm going to have to know forever you've won all the games.
I'm sure my mouth probably has a sulky pout to it. He rolls me onto my stomach and begins to kiss up my spine.
Do you trust me now that you know everything?
For a moment, we shimmer against each other, my skin trembling for the touch of his lips.
Yes.
And if you get the job, I will be happy for you.
I already resigned. My last day was Friday. Jeanette came in and did the paperwork. I'm on vacation now.
What the fuck? I blurred into his bed.
I don't want anything that means I can't have you. There's nothing worth it.
But I didn't have a chance to compete against you.
I don't know whether to laugh or scream. You still have to do your interview against the other candidates. From what I've heard, one of them is a real contender. The independent panel might decide you're completely incompetent.
I elbow him and he laughs. But you'll always know you could have gotten it. When we fight, I'll be worried you'll bring it up.
I've worked out a solution. Something so Machiavellian, even you will deem it a perfect solution. It retains all of the competitive bullshit we thrive on.
I'm scared to ask.
I'm the new divisional finance head of Sanderson Print, B&G's most bitter rival.
Josh. What? No.
I know. I'm an evil mastermind.
He drops a kiss to my nape and I squirm away and roll over.
How on earth did you manage that?
I feel faint.
They've been pestering me for ages about coming over for a chat. So I did. And I told them I wanted to work on their completely fucked up financial situation before they completely fold. They said okay. No one was more surprised than me, but I hid it well.
Is that why you took a day off?
Yeah. And I needed to buy you a matchbox car. They took forever to give me my formal offer. That's why I never needed help to beat you. I didn't want to beat you.
I smoothed my hand over his shoulder, the glorious curve of his arm.
So that's that. I had to make a few conflict of interest statements.
Such as?
I watch his eyes crinkle in memory. I disclose that I'll be in love with the soon-to-be chief operating officer of B&G. I can just imagine him telling them, cool and calm, "You didn't." Were they okay with that? My new boss seemed to think it was kind of sweet. Everyone's a romantic. I had to sign some non-disclosure stuff. If I tell you anything, I will be sued. Luckily, I have a good poker face when it comes to you. Oh, man, how angry was Mr. Bexley? He's not a romantic. Furious. He was on the verge of calling security. Thankfully, Elaine came in and diffused things. Once I told them my reasons for leaving, they were pretty understanding. Elaine said she's always known it.
Reasons.
I had 1 weekend left to make you love me.
I gape in horror. You didn't tell them that?
Yes. You should have seen Jeanette's face.
Pretty big gamble, Josh. Hell in a handbasket.
It paid off, thankfully.
He's pressing his mouth to my skin and sighing, breathing, like I'm a dream he never wants to wake from. He's breathing me in like he's a filthy addict. Can you be sure that you won't resent me one day? You've given up a big chance, Josh.
I'll be buried in numbers all day long. I can continue my crusade to save one publishing house from financial ruin at a time.
Please try not to make people cry anymore. It's time for you to be your true self. You're a Mr. Nice Guy.
I make no guarantees. But for me, this role at Sanderson is honestly a better fit. The best part is it means I'll be coming home to you on my couch every night. I couldn't have gotten this decision more right if I tried.
Every night?
Well, I can't on the long weekend. I'm going to Sky Diamonds for the week.
I don't suppose you're busy then.
Take me with you, he says in between kisses on my shoulders. I know the way. I've mapped the journey. Flights and hire cars. I'll grovel to your dad. I know exactly what I'll say.
I don't get it with you in that place.
I need to go there so I can start at the beginning, so that I can know everything about you.
You sure do love strawberries.
I love you, Lucy Hutton. So much you have no idea. Please be my best friend.
I'm so ridiculously in love. I decide to try it out loud. I'm in love with Joshua Templeman. His reply is a whisper in my ear.
Finally.
I pull back. I'm going to have to change my computer password.
Oh, yeah? To what?
I love Josh.
For Eva, he replies.
You cracked my password?
He rolls me onto my back and smiles down at me with eyes bright with mischief.
There's nothing else I can do. When the white flag of his sheet settles on my skin, the hating game is over. It's primal. It's a miracle. And it's forever.
Yeah, all right. Forever.
What game should we play now? I look up at him, and we play the staring game until his eyes spark in memory.
The or something game really intrigued me. Can you show me how it works?
He tosses the blankets over us, blocking out the entire world. He's laughing, my favorite sound in the world. Then there's nothing but silence. His mouth touches my skin. Let the real games begin.
This is Katie Shore. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of The Hating Game by Sally Thorne. This program was produced by John Marshall Media. Executive producer, Caitlin Gehring. Text copyright 2016 by Sally Thorne. Production copyright 2016 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.